in my hair. I couldn't handle the other colour. Someone said to me, it looks lovely, it's so natural. And I thought, yes, that's it. I haven't had my natural hair colour since I was 14. I can't cope. Welcome. So we are still doing our Recognising Jesus series. You've had me a lot. You'll be very pleased to know that this is the last one I'm preaching on in this series. We've got Steve coming up next week, and then I think we've got Adam the week after that, and then we've got Ross the week after that, and that will be the end of our series. But today we're looking at Thomas, and I just want to start off by doing a wee poll. Who here has ever got one of those texts of click here or your parcel's going to go back, or if you do not respond instantly to this text, your toll fine is going to go up to $500 or something? Who's ever got one of the? Yeah. It's quite common for us to get texts or to get an email that looks just real enough, right? The branding is kind of right, the wording is just right, and there is this urgency about it. You think, especially around Christmas with all these parcel ones, you think, oh yeah, that makes sense, that looks about right. But I hope that you've all had people around you who, who's had the seen the ACC Act advert that says, have a before you do, yeah, well, kind of taking that public awareness kind of thing. I hope you've all had people around you who've been able to say, just take a before you press on that link or you respond to that. Because we live in a world that just is constantly taking us for a ride, or trying to take us for a ride. And it can make us a bit cautious. And that's not a bad thing. But sometimes we go a little bit further than just caution. And we can go into the downright skeptical and absolutely determined that we're not going to believe anything anymore. You know, can you think of it that time? Draw to mind when you have fallen for that thing, for the urgency. Or how about if you've been caught up in the hype or gimmick of a new product and you think, oh, yes, I'm going to get one of those. It's going to revolutionize my life, to find that you're just a bit poorer for it. Hold on to that thought. That's the feeling I want you to be thinking of as we look at Thomas, because I think it helps us to understand a little bit more of where Thomas is at. So I don't know how you first met Thomas, but for many of us, it wasn't in a church setting. Now, I didn't grow up in a Christian household, and yet I knew the phrase doubting Thomas. It was never delivered as a compliment. It always had a slight kind of sneer to it. Oh, you're a doubting Thomas. Don't be such a doubting Thomas. So when I did become a Christian and I started reading the Bible, I brought this cultural understanding to my understanding of Thomas and who he was. You know, he was the one who lagged behind the truth. He was the skeptic. He was the one who was determined not to believe in this wonderful thing that the disciples were telling him about. And I assumed in reading that, with the understanding that I had, that he was like one of our modern day skeptics. Full of doubts about God, full of doubts about Jesus. You know, does God even exist? Was Jesus even a historical figure? What are some of the doubts that people around you have spoken You know, did Jesus really say he was the Son of God? Did the resurrection ever happen? Maybe it was the swoon theory. Come out to our grow nights. We might be able to help you formulate some really good answers to these questions if these are the ones that you're hearing. But I had assumed that Thomas was kind of, he fitted into the category of one of our modern day skeptics. But over the years, I've come to realise that actually, I think if we just look at him like that, we misjudge him. And it's been really lovely doing this series of recognising Jesus and reading all of these passages and seeing Jesus again through how he revealed himself to these different characters, doing this with Thomas. And I realised that I had come to doubt myself that what I had thought about Thomas was true. Because what if Thomas wasn't foolish, but maybe he was a wise seeker? Because here's the thing. When we read this, Thomas isn't saying, I don't believe and I'm never going to believe. He's saying, I'm not going to be taken for a ride. I didn't see your evidence, and I'm not going to be taken for a ride. Because by this stage, you think about Thomas and the lived history that he carries with him. The long history of Israel's disappointment. We have famine, but yay! We go into Egypt and we are saved. Oh, but we become slaves. Oh, but God is saving us and we're taken to the promised land. Oh, no, we're now in exile in Babylon. We've come back. We're rebuilding the walls. And if you know your history, the intertestamental history, you know, we have these images of the Syrian army coming down and actually even desecrating the temple at one point. They were worshipping pagan gods in the temple. And we have the Maccabees rise up and against all odds, get rid of them. Yay! Things are going to be wonderful again. Only to find that the Maccabees turned out just like all the other human authorities before them. The Psalms follow this lament and hope and lament and hope. Scriptures follow this pattern of lament and hope and lament and hope. And by the time we get to Thomas, we see who's in charge. One of the Herods. Because throughout their history, in a series of unfortunate events and kind of family infighting, the Romans have come on the scene, haven't they? And they've installed Herod the Great. And Herod was great. He built great things, even a new temple. Yay! Things are going to be tremendous. Only that by the time Herod was old, he was a little bit like me and got a bit grumpy. Hopefully not like me, because he'd also got quite malevolent. Am I malevolent yet? Not yet, Adam? Yeah. Let me know. But he'd also got a bit paranoid. So Israel is in this period of disappointment once again. Thomas has this deep collective memory of this, hope being raised and then hope being crushed. So when his friends come bursting in and say, we've seen the risen Lord, Thomas is saying, have a hmm. We're not saying, he doesn't say here, that's impossible. But he's essentially saying, I've heard this kind of excitement before. And I'm not getting swept up into the hype. I'm not going to get swept up into the gimmick of what might be happening. I need to see the evidence. I need to know that it's real. Unless I see the nail marks, unless I touch them, I'll not believe. You know, as I read this encounter several times this week, you know, I read it not as a voice of someone who is expressing shallow doubt, but someone saying, I want truth. Not just wishful thinking, not just magical thinking that everything's going to be all right. I want a product that works, not one with good gimmicks and marketing and hype. I don't think that's a bad place to be. I think that's a wise place to be. What would have been a pretty difficult place to be for Thomas, I think, is that in-between phase that he found himself. That in-between Jesus appearing to the disciples and a week later. Because when John spoke about what had happened to the disciples and their reaction to him, and listen to the sermon from last week. John has said they were overjoyed. This is the risen Lord in front of them. They had been fearful in a locked room, and now they were suddenly overjoyed when they had seen his scars and recognized him. And can you imagine? Something had changed for them. They were convinced of a new thing. They were convinced that there could be life in a new way. And Thomas is there with them and he's looking at them and he's seeing this change. Something has happened in their lives. But he doesn't quite know what. He can see the evidence. He can see the peace. But he's still not weary. He's still not there yet. He's weary. He's having that moment. And I wonder if you can think of anybody around you in your life, in your workplace, at home, who's in that spot today. You know, maybe they notice the peace that you have. Maybe they even say it. You just seem so nice. There's just a peacefulness about you. Everything else is going on, and yet there's just something about you. But they're not ready to cross the line yet. They're still asking questions. And so it's into this uneasy space where the disciples have seen the risen Jesus, and Thomas is over here looking at them, thinking, oh my word, that Jesus steps in again unexpectedly, as he does into our lives today. In that same locked room, it's the same room, the same door that is locked, the same group of people that Jesus appears to, except it's not quite the same. Because this time Thomas is with them. And what I love about this, it's that Jesus goes up to Thomas. And just as we saw what he did with the disciples, you know, I can imagine if I had been cowering in a locked room, my first thought is actually Jesus would come and give me a telling off. What on earth? You've been with me for 3 years. I've been telling you I'll rise again. And look at you. Cowardly, but he didn't do that, did he? He came and he spoke peace because he knew where they were at. And likewise, he didn't come and chastise Thomas. He didn't tell him off for doubting. He knew exactly where Thomas was, and he said, "Come, put your finger here. Reach out your hand and put it in my side. Stop doubting and believe." And maybe if he was in the modern era, he might say something like, "Thomas, your questions really matter. I've heard them. They matter to me. And these are my answers." And that's so important, because I think we sometimes get that wrong as a church, don't we? We say to people, you know, "Don't worry about your questions, just believe." Or, "I don't know and it doesn't matter to me, so your questions don't really matter." But Jesus doesn't do that. He invites the investigation. He invites Thomas in to see the truth, to feel the truth. He meets our honest doubt with real evidence. Because loving God, we're told, invites our mind as well as our soul, our strength. And it was after this that one of the most powerful, I think, this is the climax for me of John's gospel. You know, John has been building up to this point from the very beginning. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Only until this point, nobody has called him that. Thomas responds, "Kyrios moi kai theos moi," "my Lord and my God." That's huge. Because up until this point, everybody's just been circling around who Jesus is. They know there is something really very different about this man. You know, he's something other. He's a teacher, but he's something other. He's a prophet, but he's something other. "He's my Lord. I will submit my knee to him and I will do and follow him." But he's something other as well. And now here, Thomas tells us he's got it. The one that we would label the doubter is the one who seems to see Jesus most clearly of all. "My Lord and my God." And then I always used to read that next little bit. I'm probably telling a little bit more about my upbringing in this bit, but with a little bit more of an accusatory tone. "Because you have seen me, you have believed. But blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Like, Thomas, you lost it. But actually, as I was reading this week, I just heard this gentle smile on Jesus' face. Just this gentle smile saying, Thomas, I know you. Here are the answers. And because you have seen me, you have believed. And then Jesus and John, recording his words, points down to us and speaks a blessing over us, you and me here, because blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. Isn't that awesome? This blessing that Jesus has spoken out over 2,000 years ago to reach us. So we may not have seen his hands, but we're not without evidence, are we? I mean, we have the testimony that was written in here by these early witnesses. We have the historical reality of the resurrection claim. If you know Gary Habermas's work on the historical evidences for the resurrection of Christ, you'll know what I mean. But there are some good evidences. If you don't, come out to our grow nights. He's one of the speakers who will be seeing videos of. But we also have the ongoing presence of Jesus by his Spirit within our community. There is the something different in the church, the presence of God and his people, which others experience when they come in. Our faith is not a blind faith. There are good evidences for it. So what about us? What is the challenge? As I'd said before, I'm trying to put a challenge in each of my sermons for this series. I think this is where the difficulty comes in for a lot of us here. Because most of us don't want to be gullible, do we? We don't want to fall for scams, whether they're spiritual scams or otherwise. And I think that's a good instinct. But here's the question. At what point does our healthy caution become closed resistance? And where does our cynicism cross the line and become a determination to not believe anything? Because I think the beautiful thing in this passage is that Thomas asked for evidence. And when he got it, he responded. He didn't move the goalposts and go, oh, okay, but what about this? He stepped forward. He didn't stay stuck in doubt. He said, my Lord and my God. Are you someone who's asking real questions this morning, not just putting up a smokescreen? Are you asking real questions and expecting God to give the real evidence and ready to move where he leads? Or have you already decided and nothing will move you? Because Thomas was an honest seeker. He had real questions. And when Jesus heard the real answer, he responded with real answers. And I think we'd all consider ourselves wise modern people here today. And think actually that's a wise thing to do. To ask honest questions. And the wonderful thing is that Jesus meets people in their questions today. He holds out those same scarred hands. An invitation. But the invitation is always to move forwards from whatever doubt we're experiencing towards deeper trust in him. And we all experience doubts at times, don't we, if we're honest? And those doubts might be packaged in many different ways. But we all desperately want and we wait for Jesus to answer our questions that we bring to him. Jesus, it might not be, or it might be, Jesus, are you real? It might be, Jesus, do you really love me? Or it might be, Jesus, are you really with me in my suffering? Are you really holding me in my grief? Jesus, if I submit my knee to you as my Lord, will you as my God truly take my suffering and use it to transform my soul? Will you really do that? And there's something deeply sacred about walking with people in their doubts. Sitting with people and giving them space to express their questions. Listening to them. Sometimes not having the answers, but being able to just hold the trust for them that Jesus cares and that he will give the answer unexpectedly when he shows up in their locked room. You know, the disciples came to recognize Jesus through the mark of the nails in his hands. Thomas too is showing them, and Jesus is then recognized by Thomas through the answering of his doubts. You know, Thomas becomes a pattern for all of us who come with our questions, whatever they might be. And the wonderful thing about Thomas's story is it doesn't end in doubt. It ends in worship. My Lord and my God. Now that is where this passage is taking us all, up to the feet of the risen Jesus. This might have alerted you to the fact that this is one of our communion Sundays. As we come to the table this morning, here we go, we'll do that one.